Okay, so most people join late usually. So we have Neil Bauer here today. And this is Finance Meets Real Estate. It's a real pleasure to have him. As you guys know, he's used to speaking to like 1,000 people audiences, 500 people audience. So I'm really grateful to have him here. So as you guys know, Neil Bauer is known as the mad scientist of multifamily. He's a data scientist. He's also a real estate investor. He has 500 million assets under management, or a little bit above that. He's located in the San Francisco Bay Area, and he invests in like the Western states. I believe Colorado Springs is a big focus for him. So he's known for looking at data, like having amazing insights about data in real estate on the market side, possibly on the property side. He has like some of the best data out there, and I'm really happy to have him here. So with that, I'm gonna pass it on to Neil, and if you guys have any questions, feel free to put them on the chat, and we're gonna relate at the end. Thank you.
Thank you, Stefan. So it's nice to have a smaller audience than is usual. Love to answer your individual questions. So, hello, everyone. I am Neil Bawa. I'm your storyteller for this afternoon. This is a fairly short presentation. We do many different presentations, and I've always wanted to sort of zoom up to the 50-mile level and look down at the real estate world from space and figure out the truly disruptive trends that are driving real estate forward for the next 20 years. You know, the game changers like the Amazon and Google level events. And to find these trends, we looked at over 50 trends, and we've picked five trends today that we think are the most powerful. They are the most profitable. They are the most earth-shaking. And that's the story that we're going to tell you tonight. And you know, I'd guess that some of you know me, but for those that are new to me, I'm a quirky and opinionated data scientist that enjoys all forms of real estate. On the screen, you can see, you know, our projects. Half of our projects are new developments. So top row are large townhome projects. Middle and lower row are large apartments and student housing. And the one on the bottom right is a large industrial project. And I love them all, but cash flow is king. So the other half of our portfolio are ugly duckling multifamily and self-storage projects that produce many millions of dollars of beautiful cash flow for our 500 plus investors. And before we move on, you know, as you know, track record matters a lot more than a big portfolio. So it's great that our investors are kind enough to write reviews for us once they've completed projects with us. You know, savvy investors like Sarah, who's invested in over 25 projects with six different investors. Take a look at her comments. Our lawyer wants you to know we're not investment advisors. This is educational. We're going to make a lot of investment recommendations, but you're free to accept or reject them. Investments are risky. Be aware of your risk tolerance level and also understand that recommendations are not guarantees of performance. Please consult professional advisors. Okay, lawyer's happy. Let's get the show on the road. I said I'd tell you about five earth-shaking trends, and these trends are all tied back in some way or the other to COVID. Now, disclaimer, COVID is not one of these five trends, but it's accelerated all five of the trends. And remember what I'm about to say. I will say this multiple times. Hitler brainwashed 20 million Germans. COVID brainwashed 7 billion people. Every person in this podcast right now, their mind is different from before COVID. Every person on the planet is like you. We have new fears. We have new needs. We have new comforts. And there lies the opportunity of the next decade because people don't just snap back after trauma. That's not the way the human mind works. Once you understand that, as an investor, you understand this, that the biggest impact of COVID is not as a disease. It's in the way that it changed the world. You can now look into the future and you can see trends that you simply could not see before. With my help, of course. As you can see, COVID changed things, right? On the screen, you can see a bunch of things that were hugely affected by COVID, some in good ways, some in bad ways. The ones in the first row are well known. You go down, you see many trends here that are not as obvious, but are more powerful for investment. And the first trend that I want to talk about is hybrid work. Today, after all the research that I've done, I can say with absolute certainty that the world will never go back to where we were before the pandemic. HR department after HR department is releasing surveys that for white collar workers, 80 million people, The meaning of work has changed completely. Google, Apple, Facebook, Microsoft, many other companies are facing mini revolutions by their employees. Mini revolutions. So let's dive deeper into this hybrid work phenomenon and what this could mean for you as a real estate investor. COVID was, and still is, the greatest single home working experiment in history. Tens of millions of CEOs were simultaneously trained in how to run their companies remotely. And they all discovered, to their total shock, that they got more out of employees than they did the year before. And as a result, 2021 will forever be known as the first full years of the hybrid office phenomenon. Just as we become used to on-demand streaming and shared cars and shared vacation homes, the office is going to increasingly become a place where employees go when it suits them or when the office fulfills some kind of specific need. Take a look at the screen. 95% of white-collar employees want hybrid work. 75% are willing to trade perks. 64% are willing to pay more for access to a workspace at home. Half of them would even fork over money to pay for a co-working space if their company didn't pay for it. These are all huge, massive numbers, and employers are bowing one after the other to demand from workers. And if they're not, well, here's a statistic. The number of employees resigning their jobs, if not offered flexibility, is 10 times higher than at any time in history. And as they say, once you get addicted to a better life, it's not easy for people to go backwards. Okay, fine, Neil. What does this mean for me as a real estate investor, right? Well, we've got six takeaways for you up on the screen. These are very key. Number one, our research shows that people are continuing to move to distant suburbs or even to rural or remote communities. We are truly living in the first year of the tertiary market. We will continue to see demand for more bedrooms. So larger homes, larger apartments are going to become the norm. If a metro's hottest demand was for 3-bedroom homes, now it's 4. If the strongest apartment market was 1-bedroom, now it's 2. Tied to that is a greater need for co-working spaces, but not in downtown San Francisco or New York, but in the suburbs. So there's a great investment opportunity to invest in suburban office. In fact, in CBRE's recent survey came out last week, the top performing asset class was not multifamily. It was not industrial. It was suburban office. Suburban office. Finally, the last aha is that we see bidding wars continuing and even accelerating in suburbs and truly remote communities. And this is your time to grab a pen, by the way. This means that in the next 10 years could be really good for beautiful, good-looking communities like Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, St. George, Utah, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and Asheville, North Carolina. These are all places with natural beauty, strong connection, freeway connections, and a high quality of life, and people are going to flock to them. They've flocked to them already. All right. Hope you wrote that down. I'm done with trend number one, hybrid work. Let's move on to our second long-term disruptive trend, and that trend is the transformation of retail. The quote on the screen is worth reading verbatim. The pandemic has been dubbed the great accelerator for retail. That has meant e-commerce taking a greater share of sales, store fleets being further rationalized, and here's the important part, retailer and retail REIT bankruptcies being pulled forward. Let's dive in. I want to start off by pointing to this chart here on the right. This shows the percentage of retail sales that come from e-commerce. Now, as you can see, look at this yellow line. Over the last 20 years, it's been a nice, smooth increase, right? So 5% in 2011, 10% in 2018, and then COVID happened. And we see this stunning once-in-a-lifetime growth. E-commerce sales currently have straight-line growth. This is why, even after divorcing his wife and giving her $40 billion, Jeff Bezos is the richest man in the world. And what about brick and mortar? Well, some of these bullets on the left talk about the massive hit that malls are taking. Vacancies record high. 25 malls have been purchased by Amazon to create distribution centers. We're expecting almost 30% of mall-based department stores to close by the end of this year. However, bullet 4 points out something interesting. Brick and mortar retail is not going away. It's going through an evolution, painful evolution. Retail's going to survive, but it's going to morph into something unique. Live, work, play type outdoor malls. These are newer type of outdoor malls that is a combination of what? Retail, apartments, offices, hotels. A good example, a perfect example is Simon Properties Domain project, D-O-M-A-I-N project in North Austin. The offices of the Domain provide customers for the restaurants and the retail stores during the day. And then the huge number of apartments provide buyers for them during the evening. This is a much more resilient model with lots of streams of income, right? Very, very smart concept. I think no one is ever going to build a mall again that looks like a legacy mall. Every mall they build will be work, live, play. Apartments, outdoor retail, hotels, offices. So Neil, how can I make money from this trend, right? So firstly, while Amazon stock's really expensive, have you considered investing into industrial real estate, right? Look at that straight line on the screen. If retail demand falls, wouldn't you see an increase in industrial and fulfillment centers? Yes, that's why the first phase of the industrial project we're building in Utah got sold out before construction started at fantastic prices, before construction started, right? We didn't even put tenants in and got amazing offers. So good for the 50 plus investors. And we plan on doing more industrial projects, you know, next year, not this year. And so you can sign up to get information about them at the end of the webinar. There are other ways of investing in this trend that have nothing to do with Neil Bauer. Invest in logistics and fulfillment companies. Here are a few, time to take notes. XPO Logistics, JB Hunt, Expeditors International, Coyote Logistics, Total Quality Logistics. These are all lesser known beneficiaries of this amazing e-commerce trend. Once again, just look at the yellow line. This happens fantastically rarely. Don't you want to be part of that? All right, moving on to trend number three. But before I move on to the third trend, I want to take 90 seconds to tell you about one of our projects that benefits from these trends. And I'll start with another testimonial. Ivan, another experienced investor, he's invested with us in lots of projects. He's very detail-oriented. He loves what we, and loves our projects. You know, other than the returns, what he likes is our class-leading use of data and metrics to find the fastest-growing cities and neighborhoods in the U.S. So take a look at Ivan's review. The project, Avondale Commons. It's a 320-unit Class B-plus apartment complex in a suburb of Phoenix. Most of you already know Phoenix is the fastest growing large city in the U.S. Population is growing at 2.6 times the U.S. average, 260%. And job growth is at a stunning 5.8 times the U.S. average. 200 people move every day to the fifth largest metro in the country. And Phoenix's rent growth is so incredible over the last 4 years that no metro in the U.S. even comes close. And the last 12 months have been stunning. No other large metro in the U.S. has grown rents at the 17% that Phoenix has. In fact, in Apartment List's rundown of the cities with the highest, fastest growing rents in the country, 4 out of 10 are Phoenix suburbs, 40%. The suburb that we are building in, astonishing numbers. You know, somewhere around 9.3% growth in rents, which is now accelerated in the last few months. There, it's going up more than 1.5% per month. So this is triple the U.S.'s rent growth rate. And the city we're building in, small city, it saw a mind-blowing 29.8% increase in home prices in 1 year. And imagine what that does to rents. So we started work a year ago on a 320-unit apartment complex, office workspaces, private balconies. Balconies are so huge today. Large rooms, lots of amenities, enclosed garages. Remember, Phoenix gets up to 115 degrees, so enclosed garages are pretty awesome. So we've already raised $14 million for the project. The total raise is 15, so we've got about 700. Well, actually, we have 400K left. So anyone that's interested, I'll leave some information about Avondale in the chat, and you guys can take a look at it. Accredited investors only, by the way. All right, back to trend number three. And trend three is that you've heard from us before, if you've attended our webinars, and you've heard from other people that Americans are moving, and they're moving to Boise and Phoenix and Austin, you know, these kind of, you know, magnet cities, and they're moving from New York and California. Now, while that is true, it's a well-documented trend, and our other webinars actually go into detail on it. We're now beginning to think when we started talking about this, we actually buried the lead. Yes, Phoenix and Boise and Austin are seeing insane profit from all these people running away from California. But there's actually a simpler way to make money from people moving from dense cities, and that is suburbia. Our research indicates that for every one person that moves from California to Phoenix or Boise, there are actually two or three people that moved, but they moved to much further suburbs in their own metro. And because this trend hasn't gotten as much attention as the interstate moves, we think it has more profit. COVID brainwashed 7 billion people. And if you believe that hybrid work is here to stay, then you have to believe that the suburbs are going to do really, really well in the coming years. We're already seeing it happen. Our tracking indicates that prices and rents in suburbs of major cities are going up 2 to 3 times faster than the cities themselves. And the cities are actually seeing stagnant rents. And interestingly, this is interesting, the more gritty, the more rough the neighborhood, the greater the gentrification. For example, at the top right, look at Chicago on the screen. It lost a bunch of people to its northern, richer suburbs, right? But where did prices rise the most? Well, they actually rose the most in Oak Park, Irvine, Oak Lawn. I mean, these are rough and gritty suburbs that are now seeing extraordinarily rapid gentrification. So don't be afraid to look at the rougher suburbs. We think that's where the profit is. Okay, Neil, I get it. Far-flung, gritty suburbs, more attractive, yada, yada. Are you going to give me examples? Of course, grab a pen. If you live in the San Francisco Bay Area, we think your best option is Oakley and Brentwood and Modesto. If you live in Southern California, Glendora, La Quinada, Flint Ridge. If you're in Austin, Killeen for sure. Please don't ignore Killeen. Or New Braunfels. New Braunfels, Braunfels. I think both of these are phenomenal. Killeen, K-I-L-L-E-E-N, or New Braunfels. If you're in Phoenix, look at the tiny town of Buckeye. 45 miles from Phoenix is a tiny town called Buckeye. Amazing. If you're on the West Coast and you live in Portland, look at Dallas and Detroit. Not that Dallas, not that Detroit. These are tiny cities. They're 60 miles from Portland. If you live in Tennessee, look at a personal favorite of mine, Dalton, Georgia. It's 35 miles away from Chattanooga. These are all far-flung suburbs. They're not sexy. They're not beautiful, but they're inexpensive and they've got large homes. Millions of people who never even considered them are going to consider them in the coming 3 years. Huge amounts of profit is going to accrue to people that are going to these kinds of suburban places. All right, moving on to trend number 4. But before I do that, I'm going to share one more minute of information about another one of my projects. And I start off with my final testimonial, Avinash, another experienced investor. He's invested with us in multiple projects, talks about his experience with both a value-add property and a new construction property. Really describes how well things have gone for him before and during the pandemic. So check out his review. And here's another one of our projects. This is a collection. It's a collection of triplex and fourplex townhomes in the city of New Braunfels. Austin, San Antonio is unquestionably the most powerful corridor in America. It's about 75 miles long. And within the corridor are two cities, San Marcos and New Braunfels. New Braunfels is faster growing. These are townhomes they're delivering next year. And you've all heard that built-to-rent is the fastest growing segment in all of real estate. In fact, it was the fastest before COVID. After COVID, when people want more space, they want backyards, built-to-rent has been the unicorn in real estate with valuations going absolutely insane. So if you take the hottest trend in real estate, combine it with the third fastest growing city in the US in terms of population, you get a home run. And if you place that city halfway between two mega metros, one of which is called Austin, then we think you get a triple home run. And by the way, New Braunfels, amazing city itself, population growth 6.5%. That's 10 times faster than the US. That's 3 times faster than Phoenix. Its job growth is 9.8 times faster than the rest of the US. Most importantly, incomes have risen 55% since 2010, with a batshit crazy 26% of that income increase coming in the last year. People fleeing to New Braunfels, rich people fleeing, right? This is a German town. It's very eclectic, very good looking. So just amazing stuff happening here. Home prices completely out of control, 26.5% in the last year. inventory has gone from 2.5 months to half a month, 15 days. Can't find anything, any place to buy. So early this year, we started working on building this beautiful community, 110 townhomes spread over 10 acres, smack dab in the middle of the city. Everything is around us, right? And the city of New Brunsfels, they're doing us a huge favor. They're building a very large modern park with amenities next to us. We're bordering them. We're trying to actually get a gate to the park from our property. So we've learned a lot from COVID. We have vaulted ceilings, large windows, wide rooms. You know, we think this is the dream rental product and leverages all of our analytics. We're selling them to investors, not a syndication. And our investors will make 19% annualized, 100% ownership. We don't get any part of it. They keep all of the profit. So I'm happy to give you more information about this one as well. Now let's get back to trend number four and the last trend, trend number five. So this trend is so exciting. It's so exciting. Let's start with the blockchain part, the less exciting part. So at its most basic level, blockchain. What's blockchain? It's literally a chain of digital blocks. These blocks store information about transaction like date and time and dollar numbers. In simple terms, it's a way to store transaction information in a decentralized database that no government can touch. Now, real estate transactions, for the most part, are offline transactions, right? Blockchain has now opened up a way to change that. Smart contracts allow anyone to digitize a physical asset and take over the listings, the payments, the legal documentation, all in real time. So you're getting rid of all that lengthy paperwork and the need for brokers and lawyers and banks. Instead, you have instant contracts, high transparency, no government can touch it. So blockchain and smart contracts are the key to making illiquid real estate liquid. But the best part is while blockchain and smart contracts, very cool, they become 10 times more powerful when you combine them with, oh, awesome, tokenization. Because smart tokens allow you to buy real estate the way you buy stock. As a seller, Stefan is going to break up some property that he buys in Cleveland. He's going to break it up into pieces of $100. Now, this property can be sold in pieces at the same time on a dozen different online markets. 1,000 or 10,000 investors could own a piece of your property or your Airbnb property, right? In fact, you could raise enough equity to cash to bring your equity in the property down to zero. And tokenization sites would automatically send the rental profits to token holders. You never know who they are. You never speak with them, right? Like, does the CEO of Apple know every Apple shareholder? He doesn't need to. That's the same thing that happens with tokens. Property becomes stock, right? Heck, you could get a cash flowing parking lot in Manhattan with a few clicks. I mean, this is wild because real estate's always made more money than stocks, but investing in real estate was always 1,000 times more difficult than investing in stocks. It takes 5 minutes to buy a stock, at least takes 100 hours of work to buy a property, right? So what happens if real estate becomes fully transactable? What happens if Patrick McGuire, who's sitting and watching this, and writes down 10 different cities, and Patrick says, I love what Neil's saying. I'm going to go to the web to an app like E-Trade or Robinhood, and I'm basically going to buy $1,000 tokens in 10 different properties in, you know, each of the cities that Neil has mentioned. What happens then? 15 minutes later, Patrick is getting cash flow from 10 properties in 5 different metros that he hadn't even heard of when Neil started his conversation. Wow, this is just stunning. This is nothing like this has ever happened. And that's why real estate investors are so excited about blockchain and tokenization. Now, it's early days. It's started to happen this year. So the company that I want to use as my primary example, I want you to write this down, is Lofty. L-O-F-T-Y, Lofty.ai. Lofty.ai. You'll notice that you can go to Lofty's website and within 5 minutes buy pieces of homes in 3 different cities. But this is just the beginning. Soon people will be selling multifamilies. Then they'll be selling hotels. Then they'll be selling every goddamn kind of real estate asset. And you'll be able to buy them in $50 or $100. This is the biggest change to real estate ever. All right, last one. I kept number five for the end because I think it's the most predictive of them all. All of you have heard that inflation in the U.S. is skyrocketing, right? Last month, it was at nearly 6% annualized. That's crazy. I mean, it's usually under 1.5%. So we look deeper. And guess what we found? We found that the biggest cause of inflation in the U.S. was actually coming from real estate construction, right? And real estate construction is also producing the highest number of jobs in the U.S. compared to any other vertical. So there were, you know, it's basically the cost used for buildings and homes has gone through the roof. You know, initially we blamed shutdowns in lumber mills, and then we realized that Canadian American lumber mills, they've actually been running at full capacity for months. So we started looking at construction statistics, and we found, firstly, more homes are being built in the U.S. than any other time in the last decade. Demand is astonishingly high. We also found that people all over the world, not just in America, all over the world have decided they need to rehab their homes and add workrooms and spaces. I added about 700 square feet in the last year. As you can imagine, that led to insane increases in lumber prices. Before the pandemic, lumber prices were around $400 a square foot. Today, they're around $750, which is almost double. Briefly, by the way, you can look at it on the chart on the right. They almost went up to $1,600. That's four times as high. Right. So, but that was short term panic. I mean, even at the price, once it's come down, lumber costs almost double what it used to cost before the pandemic. And we think, here's the aha moment. We think that homes all over the world, not just in the US, will cost more to build for a decade. And this is our big conclusion. The rich want bigger homes and newer homes with health benefits and better views. And so upscale homes are going up in value the most. Doesn't happen normally. The middle class now wants backyards and workspaces and exercise space, so demand is up there as well. The lower middle class wants apartments with more rooms. Everyone wants more, more, more. You see Oprah's picture, right? And the Fed is providing fuel with these low interest rates. Okay, Neil, I get it. There'll be a sustained increase in the prices of new construction homes. But I'm not a builder. How do I make money? Well, a number of ways. Firstly, if construction costs go up, then about 6 to 12 months later, rents for existing home and apartments will go up faster than the norm. So construction costs started rising 1 month after COVID hit. And guess what we've seen? The last 5 months, May, June, July, August, and September, these 5 months, all five of them have been the fastest growing months in history for rents. All five, back to back. At the end of September, U.S. rents were growing at 12% annualized. That is a mind-boggling number, because many of you might not even underwrite for 12% in 5 years. But that's what's already happened. Not a projection, not the future. That's what happened in the last 12 months in the U.S. Take a look at the page. Look at Boise rents, 39% in a year. Rents in the U.S. used to rise at 2% before COVID. In 2019, they rose 2.2%. Look at what's happening now. COVID brainwashed 7 billion people. We don't believe that real estate is in a bubble because 7 billion people think differently today about where they live. That cannot change in a short amount of time. And if you think real estate is too expensive, you know, think about this one thing I'm going to say. This is pretty much the last thing I'm going to say today. In January 2020, the price of Bitcoin was $7,000. Today, it's $49,000. If an asset that has never produced any cash flow for anybody and could conceivably goes to $0 in value can go from 7,000 to 49,000, a 7x increase, why would you have trouble with real estate, a tangible profit-producing asset class, an experienced asset class, nothing new? Why would you have trouble with it going up 40%? What makes you think that real estate is overvalued? Our conclusion supports that real estate is, in fact, very nicely valued and has plenty of room to grow in a world where we just printed $10 trillion, in a world where 40% of all currency ever printed was printed in the last 12 months. In that crazy world, real estate prices make all of the sense in the world. So we believe that you should continue investing in real estate, both on the multifamily and on the single family side. We think single family actually might be a bigger beneficiary than multifamily. And if you don't have a way to invest, we suggest the following stocks. These are stocks of home builders. We suggest Lennar, L-E-N-N-A-R, KB Homes, Pult, P-U-L-T-E, and D.R. Horton. All four of these are very big beneficiaries of 7 billion brains being brainwashed. So that's it for us. If you're interested, I'm going to put in the chat, I'm going to put in links directly to those two projects that I mentioned. And let me just go into the chat and send it out to everyone. You can go to growcapitalist.com. There you go. There's a link there. And you can look in those projects. And we're happy to answer your questions. Peggy is one of our investor relations managers. She's happy to, you can directly set up a meeting with her if that's interesting for you. Otherwise, I'm happy to take your questions. Let me see what's in the question list now. It usually takes a couple minutes for these questions to start flowing. Is there an example of RE tokenization? Good question. Yes, I gave it to you. Lofty.ai. Go open your browser, type in lofty.ai. Currently, they should have three properties available for sale. Note that I'm not associated with these people in any way. They'd asked me to be on their advisory board and I was busy. I turned them down. So I don't have any stock. I don't have any benefit. I like what they're doing though. Smart people. There's going to be a lot more coming. There's five or six companies doing it, but some of them, the trend started outside the US. So a lot of them are in Europe. But now we're seeing at least 20 startups that are going to hit the market in the next 6 months. Raj says, Neil, you mentioned SFR may do better than MF. Yes. I mean, think about it. Multifamily is a bunch of apartments, high density apartments. COVID brainwashed 7 billion people. And one of the things it brainwashed them to do was to have this human need for more space, vertical space, which is why, you know, class A rents are going up faster because they're 9 feet higher. So you feel, you know, like you have more space and also horizontal space. So what we are seeing is even though rents are rising really, you know, quickly, the single family rents are rising even faster than multifamily. So, you know, I'm fairly agnostic. You know, most of, you know, vast majority of my portfolio is in multifamily. I'm not going to go buy single family homes. But I mean, the truth is that single family is a very powerful market. It's not very scalable, but it's very powerful. Laura says, your thoughts on NFTs for trading single family homes? I think non-fungible tokens or NFTs can be used for all kinds of stuff, but it's more likely that the standard tokenization that I mentioned is more likely, going to happen. Now, keep in mind, if you think about it, Laura, NFTs is what Lofty.ai is using. So it is happening. But I think that standard tokenization is more likely than what we consider to be NFT. So it's an interesting concept. How much money it makes, Laura, I don't know. In general, I dislike it, but that's a personal thing because what these people are trying to do, like Lofty, is trying to basically sell $50 tokens. I believe in being Apple. I don't let my investors invest less than $100,000. And we are about to raise our minimum to $250K for syndication. So I don't like letting investors invest in $50, you know, chunks, but obviously these people are after, you know, public, going public. So my thoughts on, you know, PE, BlackRock, et cetera, aggressively buying single family homes. I think it's going to accelerate. The amount of money being raised to buy single family homes is pretty disgusting. The single family homes don't exist. So guess what everyone's pivoted to in the last 12 months? They are pivoting to working with developers such as myself who are building what is known as build for rent, BFR, or build to rent. I'm going to give you an example that'll blow your mind if you understand cap rates. Urbana, a 200-unit built for rent community, single family built for rent, very small homes. Like imagine 1,000 square foot single family homes with a postage stamp sized backyard. Okay. Urbana just got into contract in Austin, not in the best part of Austin, not in the expensive part of Austin, because it is built for rent and it was the only product available and BlackRock and a bunch of other people were chasing it for 2.75 cap. It's ugly. 2.75 cap. Hopefully that answers Ross's question. What will the Fed do with interest rates this month? I have no idea, Patrick, but they can only go up. I mean, inflation is not slowing. So if it doesn't slow for another few months, I expect that the Fed will raise interest rates at the December meeting. I'm not sure if they'll do it this month, I think it makes sense to wait until December, don't you think? I mean, I think it would be too aggressive to raise them at this month. But I think the December meeting, they might kind of signal to the market and raise it by a quarter, or they might do it in the Feb meeting. But one meeting out of December and Feb is a quarter point increase, I think, and then maybe another quarter point increase. They want to see how the economy fully recovers. COVID's not quite gone yet. So do you think that traditional malls and office spaces in large metros could be converted to multifamily in an economically feasible manner for investors? Jagdish asks that. Office spaces, hell no, that doesn't work well. Traditional malls, yes. So there's a company, they are called Sear something, Sear City, Sear something. They are, what they're doing is they've raised $2 billion to buy Sears locations in malls, right? As you know, Sears is closing. And they're basically building multifamily inside of Sears and on top of it, right? So there's multiple companies that are looking to do that. The difference is, you know, the malls have got the parking spaces and they've got cities that are very hungry to help. Office space, I mean, office spaces are highly occupied at this point. I mean, offices, you know, COVID didn't really change office occupancy that much. So I don't see a lot of value that you're creating there. You're going to buy expensive office space and convert it. Isn't it better to buy cheap malls? All right. Bum, 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 bum.
Neil, I have a question. So you mentioned real estate being nicely valued right now. So besides like some of the qualitative factors you shared, like what are some sort of more numerical, like statistical things that you have done on that end? And what do you think about local market monitors? Since I know you guys use this and I know they have some of the sort of how overvalued real estate is, some of those measures.
They do. And I talk with Ingo Winzer, their CEO, often. And he says, look, you know, we have our own methodologies. You know, obviously they haven't been proven right as so far. You know, the numbers keep going up and they keep thinking that they're going to go down. The challenge is, and they're thinking of changing their methodology. This is insider news because I do talk with them. And the answer is they're thinking of changing their methodology because they believe that the amount of liquidity in the marketplace is so excessive that they have to start factoring it into their model, but they haven't done it so far, right? So I think the best indicator you can use is the price of Bitcoin. If a asset that produces is extraordinarily risky and produces absolutely no income ever, can 7x, then I think 40% increase in real estate is extremely, extremely reasonable. Otherwise, how do you explain the price of Bitcoin?
Well, it's a different, right? It's a less fundamental asset. So it's kind of not so, it's a less fundamental asset in a sense. So it derives.
Yeah, but no, way. I don't agree with that, Stefan.
Yeah.
Fundamental assets are valued at higher prices than less fundamental assets. Don't you think that, you know, U.S. Treasury bonds, which is the most fundamental asset in the world, has the highest price? There are the 5-year U.S. Treasury bond is offering 0.99% today. Why? Because it's the most fundamental asset. Bitcoin has no fundamentals. It's not even an institutional grade asset, and it's gone up 7x, right? So there's only two reasons. One is you think that everyone's fearful. Well, if everyone's fearful, why are they buying real estate and stock? So that doesn't, in my mind, that doesn't compute. If people are fearful, they wouldn't be paying so much for stocks and real estate, right? So it's not fear. It's simply because asset values have to change based on the amount of equity that's injected into the world. I think the total is somewhere in the $15 trillion. We become used to saying these words like trillions, right? A trillion is 1,000 billion, and a trillion is 1,000,000,000,000. So when you take 1,000,000,000,000, 15,000,000,000,000, and inject it into the world economy, all of that money was loaned into existence. So it needs yield. So people have to produce that yield. So when they're producing the yield, they have to buy everything. So and by the way, you might say, well, yeah, but this money will go away. Okay, show me the money from the 2008 crisis that went back, right? The Fed printed $4.2 trillion, $4,200 billion. They only managed to take $360 billion back, 8%, in 10 years, right? I don't believe any of this money will ever go back. So if it stays here, it will create, I mean, we've created liquidity that has never happened in the history of the world. And so obviously that is going to result in increase in asset prices. And that has nothing to do with real estate. Every asset price in the world will increase. The price of apples will increase. You've already seen the price of apples increase, right? Grocery in the US is skyrocketing because everything needs yield. So I just don't think this is about real estate. This has nothing to do with real estate. It has to do with the fact that you can inject $15 trillion into the world economy at one time, and it would never happen if it wasn't for COVID. Now you can't take it out because the world economy would crash without it. Right. So, you know, I'll take maybe one more question and then I'll jump off. I'm at the end of my time. Any last questions?
Yeah. Hi, Neil. This is Jagdish. I love the piece that you did on climate change, though I must say I was a little scared at the end of it. How are you putting that actively into your investment decisions and projects? Or do you think it's still some time off before you can do that?
I'll give an answer that all the climate change people will hate. I'm making no purchase investment decisions based on climate change, but in any area that is highly affected by climate change, I'm exiting within the next 5 years. I believe that the true information about climate change will not become public to investors for another 10 years because there's a lot of misinformation on social media about it. And so in 10 years, everyone will know, so it'll be too late to exit. So like Phoenix, for example, is highly affected by climate change. These people don't have water. You know, they're going to run out of their water within the next 15 years. And I don't see what's going to happen at that point of time, unless they dig a massive tunnel all the way from Seattle. I don't see where their water comes from. Maybe they'll dig one from the East Coast, but it'll be the largest public works project in the history of this country. So I don't know what's going to happen. So I'm exiting all my Phoenix projects within the next 4 years. So the short answer is I'm doing nothing on the buy side, but on the sell side, I'm going to sell everything in Florida and in Phoenix within 5 years.
Thanks.
Make sense? All right. Well, thank you all for coming. I hope you enjoyed this, and hopefully we'll have a chance to talk again in the future.
Thank you, Neil.
Thank you, Neil and Stefan. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for joining. Goodbye.
Thank you, Neil and Stefan.
Thanks, Stefan.